turnabout, while section sergeants could take turns in charge of the platoon. The disposition took no more than 10 minutes once I had detailed the plan and given out bearings to the sergeants. Nobody had to move very far. I warned everybody to keep eyes open for a company of engineers. As soon as each section reported its listening posts in operation, I clicked to the wide circuit. Odd numbers, lie down. Prepare to sleep. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, sleep. A suit is not a bed, but it will do. One good thing about hypno-preparation for combat is that, in the unlikely event of a chance to rest, a man can be put to sleep instantly by post-hypnotic command triggered by someone who is not a hypnotist, and awakened just as instantly, alert and ready to fight. It is a lifesaver, because a man can get so exhausted in battle that he shoots at things that aren't there and can't see what he should be fighting. But I had no intention of sleeping. I had not been told to, and I had not asked. The very thought of sleeping, when I knew that perhaps many thousands of bugs were only a few hundred feet away, made my stomach jump. Maybe that sensor was infallible. Perhaps the bugs could not reach us without alerting our listening posts. Maybe. But I didn't want to chance it. I clicked to my private circuit. Sarge?
Yes, sir.
You might as well get a nap. I'll be on watch. Lie down and prepare to sleep. 1, 2.
Excuse me, sir, I have a suggestion.
Yes?
If I understand the revised plan, no action is expected for the next 4 hours. You could take a nap now, and then...
Forget it, Sarge. I am not going to sleep. I'm going to make the rounds of the listening posts and watch for that sapper company.
Very well, sir.
I'll check number 3 while I'm here. You stay here with Brumby and catch some rest while I...
Johnny?
I broke off.
Yes, Captain.
Had the old man been listening?
Are your posts all set?
Yes, Captain, and my odd numbers are sleeping. I am about to inspect each post.
Then let your sergeant do it. I want you to rest.
But, Captain,
lie down. That's a direct order. Prepare to sleep.
1, 2, 3.
Johnny?
Captain, with your permission, I would like to inspect my posts first. Then I'll rest, if you say so. But I would rather remain awake.
Blackie guffawed in my ear.
Look, son, you've slept for 1 hour and 10 minutes.
Sir?
Check the time.
I did so, and felt foolish.
You wide awake, son?
Yes, sir, I think so.
Things have speeded up. Call your odd numbers and put your even numbers to sleep. With luck, they may get 1 hour. So swap 'em around, inspect your posts, and call me back.
I did so and started my rounds without a word to my platoon sergeant. I was annoyed at both him and Blackie, at my company commander because I resented being put to sleep against my wishes, and as for my platoon sergeant, I had a dirty hunch that it wouldn't have been done if he weren't the real boss and myself just a figurehead. But after I had checked posts number 3 and 1, no sounds of any sort, both were forward of the bug area, I cooled down. After all, blaming a sergeant, even a fleet sergeant, for something a captain did was silly.
Sarge?
Yes, Mr. Rico.
Do you want to catch a nap with the even numbers? I'll wake you up a minute or two before I wake them.
He hesitated slightly.
Sir, I'd like to inspect the listening posts myself.
Haven't you already?
No, sir, I've been asleep the past hour.
Huh?
He sounded embarrassed.
The captain required me to do so. He placed Brumby temporarily in charge and put me to sleep immediately after he relieved you.
I started to answer, then laughed helplessly.
Sarge, let you and I go off somewhere and go back to sleep. We're wasting our time. Captain Blackie is running this platoon.
I have found, sir,
he answered stiffly, "that Captain Blackstone invariably has a reason for anything he does." I nodded thoughtfully, forgetting that I was 10 miles from my listener. "Yes, you're right. He always has a reason. Hmm. Since he had us both asleep, he must want both of us awake and alert now."
"I think that must be true."
"Hmm. Any idea why?" He was rather long in answering. "Mr. Rico," he said slowly, "if the captain knew, he would tell us. I've never known him to hold back information, but sometimes he does things a certain way without being able to explain why. The captain's hunches, well, I've learned to respect them." "So? Squad leaders are all even numbers?"
"They're asleep."
"Yes, sir." "Alert the lance of each squad. I won't wake anybody, but when we do, seconds may be important."
"Right away."
I checked the remaining forward posts, then covered the four posts bracketing the bug village, jacking my phones in parallel with each listener. I had to force myself to listen because you could hear them, down there below, chittering to each other. I wanted to run. And it was all I could do not to let it show. I wondered if that special talent was simply a man with incredibly acute hearing. Well, no matter how he did it, the bugs were where he said they were. Back at OCS, we had received demonstrations of recorded bug noises. These four posts were picking up typical nest noises of a large bug town, that chittering which may be their speech, though why should they need to talk if they are all remotely controlled by the braincast? A rustling like sticks and dry leaves, a high background whine, which is always heard at a settlement, and which had to be machinery. Their air conditioning, perhaps. I did not hear the hissing, crackling noise they make in cutting through rock. The sounds along the Bug Boulevard were unlike the settlement sounds, a low background rumble which increased to a roar every few moments, as if heavy traffic were passing. I listened to post number 5, then got an idea. Checked it by having the standby man at each of the four posts along the tunnel call out "Mark" to me each time the roar got loudest. Presently I reported, "Captain?"
"Yeah, Johnny."
"The traffic along this bug race is all moving one way, from me toward you. Speed is approximately 110 miles an hour. A load goes past about once a minute."
"Close enough," he agreed.
"I make it 108 with a headway of 58 seconds.
"Oh."
I felt dashed and changed the subject. "I haven't seen that sapper company."
"You won't.
They picked a spot in the middle rear of Headhunter area. Sorry, I should have told you.
Anything more?"
"No, sir." We clicked off and I felt better. Even Blackie could forget. And there hadn't been anything wrong with my idea. I left the tunnel zone to inspect the listening post to right and rear of the bug area. Post 12. As with the others, there were two men asleep, one listening, one standby. I said to the standby, "Getting anything?"
"No, sir."
The man listening, one of my 5 recruits, looked up and said, "Mr. Rico, I think this pickup has just gone sour."
"I'll check it," I said.
He moved to let me jack in with him. Frying bacon, so loud you could smell it. I hit the all-hands circuit. "First platoon, up, wake up, call off, and report." And clicked over to officer circuit. "Captain, Captain Blackstone, urgent."
"Slow down, Johnny, report."
"Frying bacon sounds, sir," I answered, trying desperately to keep my voice steady. "Post 12, at coordinates Easter 9, square black 1.
"Easter 9, he agreed.
"Decibels?" I looked hastily at the meter on the pickup.
"I don't know, Captain. Off the scale at the max end. It sounds like they're right under my feet."
"Good," he applauded. and I wondered how he could feel that way. "Best news we've heard today. Now listen, son, get your lads awake."
"They are, sir."
"Very well. Pull back two listeners, have them spot check around post 12. Try to figure where the bugs are going to break out, and stay away from that spot. Understand me?"
"I hear you, sir,"
I said carefully.
"But I do not understand."
He sighed. "Johnny, you'll turn my hair gray yet. Look, son, we want them to come out. The more, the better. You don't have the firepower to handle them, other than by blowing up the tunnel as they reach the surface. And that is the one thing you must not do. If they come out in force, a regiment can't handle them. And that's just what the general wants. And he's got a brigade of heavy weapons in orbit, waiting for it. So you spot that breakthrough, fall back and keep it under observation. If you're lucky enough to have a major breakthrough in your area, your reconnaissance will be patched through all the way to the top. So stay lucky and stay alive, got it?"
"Yes, sir. Spot the breakthrough, fall back and avoid contact. Observe and report."
"Get on it."
I pulled back listeners 9 and 10 from the middle stretch of Bug Boulevard and had them close in on coordinates Easter 9 from right and left, stopping every half mile to listen for frying bacon. At the same time, I lifted post 12 and moved it toward our rear, while checking for a dying away of the sound. In the meantime, my platoon sergeant was regrouping the platoon in the forward area between the bug settlement and the crater, all but 12 men who were ground listening. Since we were under orders not to attack, we both worried over the prospect of having the platoon spread too widely for mutual support. So he rearranged them in a compact line 5 miles long, with Brumby's section on the left, nearer the bug settlement. This placed the men less than 300 yards apart, almost shoulder to shoulder for cap troopers, and put 9 of the men still on listening stations within support distance of one flank or the other. Only the 3 listeners working with me were out of reach of ready help. I told Bayonne of the Wolverines and DeCampo of the Headhunters that I was no longer patrolling in Y, and I reported our regrouping to Captain Blackstone. He grunted, "Suit yourself. Got a prediction on that breakthrough?"
"It seems to center about Easter 10, Captain, but it is hard to pin down. The sounds are very loud in an area about 3 miles across, and it seems to get wider. I'm trying to circle it at an intensity level just barely on scale."
I added, "Could they be driving a new horizontal tunnel just under the surface?"
He seemed surprised.
"That's possible. I hope not. We want them to come up."
He added,
"Let me know if the center of the noise moves. Check on it."
"Yes, sir."
"Captain?"
"Huh? Speak up."
"You told us not to attack when they break out. If they break out, what are we to do? Are we just spectators?" There was a longish delay, 15 or 20 seconds, and he may have consulted upstairs. At last he said, "Mr. Rico, you are not to attack at or near Easter 10. Anywhere else? The idea is to hunt bugs."
"Yes, sir," I agreed happily. "We hunt bugs."
"Johnny," he said sharply, "if you go hunting metals instead of bugs, and I find out, you're going to have a mighty sad-looking Form 31.
"Captain," I said earnestly, "I don't ever want to win a medal. The idea is to hunt bugs."
"Right. Now quit bothering me."
I called my platoon sergeant, explained the new limits under which we would work, told him to pass the word along, and to make sure that each man's suit was freshly charged, air and power.
"We've just finished that, sir. I suggest that we relieve the men with you."
He named 3 reliefs.
That was reasonable, as my ground listeners had had no time to recharge. But the reliefs he named were all scouts. Silently, I cussed myself for utter stupidity. A scout's suit is as fast as a command suit, twice the speed of a marauder.
I had been having a nagging feeling of something left undone, and had checked it off to the nervousness I always feel around bugs. Now I knew. Here I was, 10 miles away from my platoon with a party of 3 men, each in a marauder suit. When the bugs broke through, I was going to be faced with an impossible decision, unless the men with me could rejoin as fast as I could.
That's good, I agreed. But I no longer need 3 men. Send Hughes, right away. Have him relieve Nyberg. Use the other 3 scouts to relieve the listening posts farthest forward.
Just Hughes? He said doubtfully.
Hughes is enough. I'm going to man 1 listener myself. 2 of us can straddle the area. We know where they are now. I added, get Hughes down here on the bounce.
For the next 37 minutes, nothing happened. Hughes and I swung back and forth along the forward and rear arcs of the area around Easter 10, listening 5 seconds at a time, then moving on. It was no longer necessary to seat the microphone in rock. It was enough to touch it to the ground to get the sound of frying bacon, strong and clear. The noise area expanded, but its center did not change. Once I called Captain Blackstone to tell him the sound had abruptly stopped, and again 3 minutes later to tell him it had resumed. Otherwise, I used the scout's circuit and let my platoon sergeant take care of the platoon and the listening posts near the platoon. At the end of this time, everything happened at once. A voice called out on the scout circuit, Bacon Fry, Albert 2. I clicked over and called out, Captain, Bacon Fry at Albert 2, Black 1. Clicked over to liaison with the platoon surrounding me. Liaison flash, Bacon Frying at Albert 2, Square Black 1. And immediately heard De Campo reporting. Frying bacon sounds at Adolf 3, Green 12. I relayed that to Blackie and cut back to my own scout circuit. Heard, Bugs, Bugs, help!
Where?
No answer. I clicked over. Sarge, who reported Bugs? He rapped back. Coming up out of their town, about Bangkok 6.
Hit 'em.
I clicked over to Blackie. Bugs at Bangkok 6, Black 1. I am attacking.
I heard you order it, he answered calmly. How about Easter 10?
Easter 10 is...
The ground fell away under me, and I was engulfed in bugs.
I didn't know what had happened to me. I wasn't hurt. It was a bit like falling into the branches of a tree. But those branches were alive and kept jostling me while my gyros complained and tried to keep me upright. I fell 10 or 15 feet, deep enough to be out of daylight. Then a surge of living monsters carried me back up into the light. And training paid off. I landed on my feet, talking and fighting. Breakthrough at Easter 10. No, Easter 11, where I am now. Big hole, and they're pouring up. Hundreds. More than that. I had a hand flamer in each hand and was burning them down as I reported. Get out of there, Johnny.
Wilco.
And I started to jump. And stopped. Checked the jump in time, stopped flaming, and really looked. For I suddenly realized that I ought to be dead.
Correction, I said, looking and hardly believing. Breakthrough at Easter 11 is a feint. No warriors.
Repeat.
Easter 11, Black 1, breakthrough is entirely by workers so far. No warriors. I am surrounded by bugs and they are still pouring out, but not a one of them is armed. And those nearest me all have typical worker features. I have not been attacked.
I added, Captain, do you think this could be just a diversion, with their real breakthrough to come somewhere else?
Could be, he admitted.
Your report is patched through right to division, so let them do the thinking. Stir around and check what you've reported. Don't assume that they are all workers. You may find out the hard way.
Right, Captain. I jumped high and wide, intending to get outside that mass of harmless but loathsome monsters.
That rocky plain was covered with crawling black shapes in all directions. I overrode my jet controls and increased the jump, calling out, "Hughes, report."
"Bugs, Mr. Rico. Zillions of 'em. I'm burning 'em down."
"Hughes, take a close look at those bugs. Any of 'em fighting back? Aren't they all workers?"
I hit the ground and bounced again. He went on,
"Hey, you're right, sir. How did you know?"
"Rejoin your squad, Hughes." I clicked over.
"Captain, several thousand bugs have exited near here, and from an undetermined number of holes. I have not been attacked. Repeat, I have not been attacked at all. If there are any warriors among them, they must be holding their fire and using workers as camouflage."
He did not answer.
There was an extremely brilliant flash far off to my left, followed at once by one just like it, but farther away to my right front. Automatically, I noted time and bearings. "Captain Blackstone, answer." At the top of my jump, I tried to pick out his beacon, but that horizon was cluttered by low hills in square black too. I clicked over and called out, "Sarge, can you relay to the captain for me?" At that very instant, my platoon sergeant's beacon blinked out. I headed on that bearing as fast as I could push my suit. I had not been watching my display closely. My platoon sergeant had the platoon, and I had been busy, first with grounding and listening, and most lately with a few hundred bugs. I had suppressed all but the non-comms beacons to allow me to see better. I studied the skeleton display, picked up Brumby and Kona, their squad leaders and section chasers.
"Kona, where's the platoon sergeant?"
"He's reconnoitering a hole, sir."
"Tell him I'm on my way, rejoining."
I shifted circuits without waiting.
"First platoon blackguards to second platoon, answer."
"What do you want?"
Lieutenant Kuroshin growled.
"I can't raise the captain."
"You won't, he's out."
"Dead?"
"No, but he's lost power, so he's out."
"Oh, then you're company commander."
"All right."
"All right, so what? Do you want help?"
No sir."
"Then shut up,"
Kuroshin told me.
"Until you do need help. We've got more than we can handle here."
"Okay."
I suddenly found that I had more than I could handle. While reporting to Kuroshin, I shifted to full display and short range, as I was almost closed with my platoon. And now I saw my first section disappear one by one, Brumby's beacon disappearing first.
"Kona, what's happening to the first section?"
His voice sounded strained. "They are following the platoon sergeant down." If there's anything in the book that covers this, I don't know what it is. Had Brumby acted without orders, or had he been given orders I hadn't heard? Look, the man was already down a bug hole, out of sight and hearing. Is this a time to go legal? We would sort such things out tomorrow, if any of us had a tomorrow.
"Very well," I said. "I'm back now. Report."
My last jump brought me among them. I saw a bug off to my right, and I got him before I hit. No worker this. It had been firing as it moved.
"I've lost 3 men," Kona answered, gasping. "I don't know what Brumby lost. They broke out 3 places at once. That's when we took the casualties. But we're mopping them."
A tremendous shockwave slammed me just as I bounced again, slapped me sideways. 3 minutes, 37 seconds. Call it 30 miles. Was that our sappers putting down their corks?
"First section, brace yourself for another shockwave."
I landed sloppily, almost on top of a group of 3 or 4 bugs. They weren't dead, but they weren't fighting, they just twitched. I donated them a grenade and bounced again.
"Hit 'em now," I called out. "They're groggy, and mind that next..."
The second blast hit, as I was saying it.
It wasn't as violent. "Kona, call off your section, and everybody stay on the bounce and mop up."
The call-off was ragged and slow. Too many missing files, as I could see from my physicals display. But the mop-up was precise and fast. I ranged around the edge and got 6 bugs myself. The last of them suddenly became active just before I flamed it.
Why did concussion daze them more than it did us? Because they were unarmored? Or was it their brain bug somewhere down below that was dazed? The call-off showed 19 effectives, plus 2 dead, 2 hurt, and 3 out of action through suit failure. And 2 of these, latter, Navarre was repairing by vandalizing power units from suits of dead and wounded. The 3rd suit failure was in radio and radar and could not be repaired, so Navarre assigned the man to guard the wounded, the nearest thing to pick up we could manage until we were relieved. In the meantime, I was inspecting, with Sergeant Cunham, the few places where the bugs had broken through from their nest below. Comparison with the submap showed, as one could have guessed, that they had cut exits at the places where their tunnels were closest to the surface. One hole had closed. It was a heap of loose rock. The 2nd one did not show bug activity. I told Kona to post a lance and a private there with orders to kill single bugs. Close the hole with a bomb if they started to pour out. It's all very well for the Sky Marshal to sit up there and decide that holes must not be closed, but I had a situation, not a theory. Then I looked at the 3rd hole, the one that had swallowed up my platoon sergeant and half my platoon. Here, a bug corridor came within 20 feet of the surface, and they had simply removed the roof for about 50 feet. Where the rock went, what caused that frying bacon noise while they did it, I could not say. The rocky roof was gone, and the sides of the hole were sloped and grooved. The map showed what must have happened. The other 2 holes came up from small side tunnels. This tunnel was part of their main labyrinth. So the other 2 had been diversions, and their main attack had come from here. Can those bugs see through solid rock? Nothing was in sight down that hole, neither bug nor human. Kona pointed out the direction the 2nd section had gone. It had been 7 minutes and 40 seconds since the platoon sergeant had gone down, slightly over 7 since Brumby had gone after him. I peered into the darkness, gulped, and swallowed my stomach. "Sergeant, take charge of your section," I said, trying to make it sound cheerful. "If you need help, call Lieutenant Koroshin." "Orders, sir?" "None. Unless some come down from above. I'm going down to find the 2nd section, so I may be out of touch for a while." Then I jumped down in the hole at once, because my nerve was slipping. Behind me I heard, "Section? 1st squad, 2nd squad, 3rd squad. By squads, follow me." And Kona jumped down too. It's not nearly so lonely that way. I had Kona leave 2 men at the hole to cover our rear, one on the floor of the tunnel, one at the surface level. Then I led them down the tunnel the 2nd section had followed, moving as fast as possible, which wasn't fast as the roof of the tunnel was right over our heads. A man can move in sort of a skating motion in a powered suit without lifting his feet, but it is neither easy nor natural. We could have trotted without armor faster. Snoopers were needed at once, whereupon we confirmed something that had been theorized. Bugs see by infrared. That dark tunnel was well lighted when seen by snoopers. So far it had no special features, simply glazed rock walls arching over a smooth, level floor. We came to a tunnel crossing, the one we were in, and I stopped short of it. There are doctrines for how you should dispose a strike force underground. But what good are they? The only certainty was that the man who had written the doctrines had never himself tried them, because, before Operation Royalty, nobody had come back up to tell what had worked and what had not. One doctrine called for guarding every intersection, such as this one. But I already used 2 men to guard our escape hole. If I left 10% of my force at each intersection, mighty soon I would be 10%ed to death. I decided to keep us together, and decided, too, that none of us would be captured, not by bugs. Far better a nice, clean real estate deal. And with that decision, a load was lifted from my mind, and I was no longer worried. I peered cautiously into the intersection, looking both ways. No bugs.
so I called out over the non-comms circuit. Brumby? The result was startling. You hardly hear your own voice when using suit radio, as you are shielded from your output. But here, underground, in a network of smooth corridors, my output came back to me as if the whole complex were one enormous waveguide. Brumby. My ears rang with it, and then rang again. Mr. Rico. Not so loud, I said, trying to talk very softly to myself. Where are you? Brumby answered, not quite so deafeningly. Sir, I don't know. We're lost. Well, take it easy. We're coming to get you. You can't be far away. Is the platoon sergeant with you? No, sir, we never... Hold it. I clicked to my private circuit. Sarge? I read you, sir. His voice sounded calm, and he was holding the volume down. Brumby and I are in radio contact, but I have not been able to make rendezvous. Where are you? He hesitated slightly. Sir, my advice is to make rendezvous with Brumby's section, then return to the surface. Answer my question. Mr. Rico, you could spend a week down here and not find me. And I am not able to move. You must... Cut it, Sarge. Are you wounded? No, sir, but... Then why can't you move? Bug trouble? Lots of it. They can't reach me now, but I can't come out. So I think you had better... Sarge, you're wasting time. I am certain you know exactly what turns you took. Now tell me, while I look at the map, and give me a vernier reading on your DR tracer. That's a direct order. Report. He did so, precisely and concisely. I switched on my headlamp, flipped up the snoopers, and followed it on the map. All right, I said presently. You're almost directly under us, and two levels down. And I know what turns to take. We'll be there as soon as we pick up the second section. Hang on. I clicked over. Brumby? Here, sir. When you came to the first tunnel intersection, did you go right, left, or straight ahead? Straight ahead, sir. Okay. Kuna, bring him along. Brumby, have you got bug trouble? Not now, sir. But that's how we got lost. We tangled with a bunch of them, and when it was over, we were turned around. I started to ask about casualties, then decided that bad news could wait. I wanted to get my platoon together and get out of there. A bug town with no bugs in sight was somehow more upsetting than the bugs we had expected to encounter. Brumby coached us through the next two choices, and I tossed Tanglefoot bombs down each corridor we did not use. Tanglefoot is a derivative of the nerve gas we had been using on the bugs in the past. Instead of killing, it gives any bug that trots through it a sort of shaky palsy. We had been equipped with it for this one operation, and I would have swapped a ton of it for a few pounds of the real stuff. Still, it might protect our flanks. In one long stretch of tunnel, I lost touch with Brumby. Some oddity and reflection of radio waves, I guess, for I picked him up at the next intersection. But there he could not tell me which way to turn. This was the place, or near the place, where the bugs had hit them. And here, the bugs hit us. I don't know where they came from. One instant, everything was quiet. Then I heard the cry of, "Bugs, bugs!" from back of me in the column. I turned, and suddenly, bugs were everywhere. I suspect that those smooth walls are not as solid as they look. That's the only way I can account for the way they were suddenly all around us and among us. We couldn't use flamers. We couldn't use bombs. We were too likely to hit each other. But the bugs didn't have any such compunctions among themselves if they could get one of us. But we had hands, and we had feet. It couldn't have lasted more than a minute. Then there were no more bugs, just broken pieces of them on the floor. And four cap troopers down. One was Sergeant Brumby, dead. During the ruckus, the second section had rejoined.
They had not been far away, sticking together to keep from getting further lost in that maze, and had heard the fight. Hearing it, they had been able to trace it by sound, where they had not been able to locate us by radio. Kuna and I made certain that our casualties were actually dead, then consolidated the two sections into one of four squads, and down we went, and found the bugs that had our platoon sergeant besieged. That fight didn't last any time at all, because he had warned me what to expect. He had captured a brain bug and was using its bloated body as a shield. He could not get out, but they could not attack him without, quite literally, committing suicide by hitting their own brain. We were under no such handicap. We hit them from behind. Then I was looking at the horrid thing he was holding, and I was feeling exultant despite our losses, when suddenly I heard close up that frying bacon noise. A big piece of roof fell on me, and Operation Royalty was over, as far as I was concerned. I woke up in a bed and thought I was back at OCS, and had just had a particularly long and complicated bug nightmare. But I was not at OCS. I was in the temporary sick bay of the Transport Orgon, and I really had had a platoon of my own for nearly 12 hours. But now I was just one more patient, suffering from nitrous oxide poisoning and overexposure to radiation through being out of armor for over an hour before being retrieved, plus broken ribs and a knock in the head which had put me out of action. It was a long time before I got everything straight about Operation Royalty, and some of it I'll never know. Why Brumby took his section underground, for example. Brumby is dead, and Naidi bought the farm next to his, and I'm simply glad that they both got their chevrons and were wearing them that day on Planet P when nothing went according to plan. I did learn eventually why my platoon sergeant decided to go down into that bug town. He had heard my report to Captain Blackstone that the major breakthrough was actually a feint, made with workers sent up to be slaughtered. When real warrior bugs broke out where he was, he had concluded correctly, and minutes sooner than staff reached the same conclusion, that the bugs were making a desperation push, or they would not expend their workers simply to draw fire. He saw that their counterattack made from Bugtown was not in sufficient force, and concluded that the enemy did not have many reserves, and decided that, at this one golden moment, one man acting alone might have a chance of raiding, finding royalty, and capturing it. Remember, that was the whole purpose of the operation. We had plenty of force simply to sterilize Planet P, but our object was to capture royalty castes, and to learn how to go down in. So we tried it, snatched that one moment, and succeeded on both counts. It made it mission accomplished for the first platoon of the Blackguards. Not very many platoons out of many, many hundreds, could say that. No queens were captured, the bugs killed them first, and only 6 brains. None of the 6 were ever exchanged. They didn't live long enough. But the Psi Warfare boys did get live specimens, so I suppose Operation Royalty was a success. My platoon sergeant got a field commission. I was not offered one, and would not have accepted, but I was not surprised when I learned that he had been commissioned. Captain Blackie told me that I was getting the best sergeant in the fleet, and I had never had any doubt that Blackie's opinion was correct. I had met my platoon sergeant before. I don't think any other Blackguard knew this, not from me, and certainly not from him. I doubt if Blackie himself knew it. But I had known my platoon sergeant since my first day as a boot. His name is Zim. My part in Operation Royalty did not seem a success to me. I was in the Argonne more than a month, first as a patient, then as an unattached casual, before they got around to delivering me and a few dozen others to Sanctuary.
It gave me too much time to think. Mostly about casualties. And what a generally messed up job I had made out of my one short time on the ground as platoon leader. I knew I hadn't kept everything juggled the way the lieutenant used to. Why, I hadn't even managed to get wounded still swinging. I had let a chunk of rock fall on me. And casualties? I don't know how many there were. I just knew that when I closed ranks, there were only 4 squads, where I had started with 6. I didn't know how many more there might have been before Zim got them to the surface, before the blackguards were relieved and retrieved. I didn't even know whether Captain Blackstone was still alive. He was. In fact, he was back in command about the time I went underground. I had no idea what the procedure was if a candidate was alive and his examiner was dead. But I felt that my Form 31 was sure to make me a buck sergeant again. It really didn't seem important that my math books were in another ship. Nevertheless, when I was let out of bed the first week I was in the Argonne, after loafing and brooding a day, I borrowed some books from one of the junior officers and got to work. Math is hard work and it occupies your mind, and it doesn't hurt to learn all you can of it, no matter what rank you are. Everything of any importance is founded on mathematics. When I finally checked in at OCS and turned in my pips, I learned that I was a cadet again instead of a sergeant. I guess Blackie gave me the benefit of the doubt. My roommate, Angel, was in our room with his feet on his desk, and in front of his feet was a package, my math books. He looked up and looked surprised. "Hey, Juan, we thought you had bought it." "Me? The bugs don't like me that well. When do you go out?" "Why, I've been out," Angel protested. "I left the day after you did, made 3 drops, and been back a week. What took you so long?" "Took the long way home. Spent a month as a passenger." "Some people are lucky." "What drops you make?" "Didn't make any," I admitted. He stared. "Some people have all the luck." Perhaps Angel was right. Eventually, I graduated. But he supplied some of the luck himself, in patient tutoring. I guess my luck has usually been people. Angel and Jelly, and the lieutenant and Carl, and Lieutenant Colonel Dubois. Yes, and my father. And Blackie, and Brumby, and Ace, and always Sergeant Zim. Brevet Sergeant Zim now, with permanent rank of first lieutenant. It wouldn't have been right for me to have wound up senior to him. Benny Montiez, a classmate of mine, and I were at the fleet landing field the day after graduation, waiting to go up to our ships. We were still such brand new second lieutenants that being saluted made us nervous, and I was covering it by reading the list of ships in orbit around Sanctuary, a list so long that it was clear that something big was stirring, even though they hadn't seen fit to mention it to me. I felt excited. I had my 2 dearest wishes in 1 package, posted to my old outfit, and while my father was still there, too. And now this, whatever it was, meant that I was about to have the polish put on me by Makey Lerney under Lieutenant Jalal, with some important drop coming. I was so full of it all that I couldn't talk about it, so I studied the lists. Phew, what a lot of ships. They were posted by types, too many to locate otherwise. I started reading off the troop carriers, the only ones that mattered to the MI. There was the Mannerheim. Any chance of seeing Carmen? Probably not. But I could send a dispatch and find out. Big ships. The new Valley Forge and the new Ypres. Marathon, El Alamein, Iwo, Gallipoli, Leyte, Marne, Tours, Gettysburg, Hastings, Alamo, Waterloo,
all places where mud feet had made their names to shine. Little ships, the ones named for foot sloggers, Horatius, Alvin York, Swamp Fox, the Raj herself, bless her heart, Colonel Bowie, Devereux, Vercingetorix, Sandino, Aubrey Cousins, Kamehameha, Audie Murphy, Xenophon, Aguinaldo. I said, there ought to be one named Magasese. Benny said, what? Ramon Magasese, I explained. Great man, great soldier. Probably be chief of psychological warfare if he were alive today. Didn't you ever study any history? Well, admitted Benny, I learned that Simon Bolivar built the pyramids, licked the Armada, and made the first trip to the moon. You left out marrying Cleopatra. Oh, that, yeah. Well, I guess every country has its own version of history. I'm sure of it. I added something to myself, and Benny said, what did you say? Sorry, Bernardo. Just an old saying in my own language. I suppose you could translate it more or less as, home is where the heart is. But what language was it? Tagalog, my native language. Don't they talk standard English where you come from? Oh, certainly. For business and school and so forth. We just talk the old speech around home a little. Traditions, you know. Yeah, I know. My folks chatter in Espanol the same way. But where do you... The speaker started playing Meadowland. Bernie broke into a grin. Got a date with the ship. Watch yourself, fella. See ya. Mind the bugs. I turned back and went on reading the ship's names. Palma later, Montgomery, Chaka, Geronimo. Then came the sweetest sound in the world. Shined the name of Roger Young. I grabbed my kit and hurried. Home is where the heart is. I was going home. 14. Am I my brother's keeper? Genesis 4:9. How think ye, if a man have 100 sheep, and one of them be gone astray, doth he not leave the 99, and goeth into the mountains, and seeketh that which is gone astray? Matthew 12:12. How much then is a man better than a sheep? Matthew 18:12. In the name of God, the beneficent, the merciful. Whoso saveth the life of one, it shall be as if he had saved the life of all mankind. The Quran, Surah 5:32. Each year we gain a little. You have to keep a sense of proportion. Time, sir. My J.O. under instruction, candidate or third lieutenant Bearpaw, stood just outside my door. He looked and sounded awfully young, and was about as harmless as one of his scalp-hunting ancestors. Right, Jimmy. I was already in armor. We walked aft to the drop room. I said as we went, one word, Jimmy. Stick with me and keep out of my way. Have fun and use up your ammo. If by any chance I buy it, you're the boss. But if you're smart, you'll let your platoon sergeant call the signals. Yes, sir. As we came in, the platoon sergeant called them to attention and saluted. I returned it and said, at ease, and started down the first section, while Jimmy looked over the second. Then I inspected the second section, too, checking everything on every man. My platoon sergeant is much more careful than I am, so I didn't find anything. I never do. But it makes the men feel better if their old man scrutinizes everything. Besides, it's my job. Then I stepped out in the middle. Another bug hunt, boys. This one is a little different, as you know.
Since they still hold prisoners of ours, we can't use a Nova bomb on Clindathu. So this time we go down, stand on it, hold it, take it away from them. The boat won't be down to retrieve us. Instead, it'll fetch more ammo and rations. If you're taken prisoner, keep your chin up and follow the rules, because you've got the whole outfit behind you. You've got the whole Federation behind you. We'll come and get you. That's what the boys from the Swamp Fox and the Montgomery have been depending on. Those who are still alive are waiting, knowing that we will show up. And here we are. Now we go get 'em. Don't forget that we'll have help all around, lots of help above us. All we have to worry about is our one little piece, just the way we rehearsed it. One last thing. I had a letter from Captain Jalal just before we left. He says that his new legs work fine, but he also told me to tell you that he's got you in mind, and he expects your names to shine. And so do I. 5 minutes for the Padre. I felt myself beginning to shake. It was a relief when I could call them to attention again and add, "Bisections, port and starboard. Prepare for drop." I was all right then, while I inspected each man into his cocoon down one side, with Jimmy and the platoon sergeant taking the other. Then we buttoned Jimmy into number 3 centerline capsule. Once his face was covered up, the shakes really hit me. My platoon sergeant put his arm around my armored shoulders. "Just like a drill, son." "I know, Father." I stopped shaking at once. "It's the waiting, that's all." "I know. 4 minutes. Shall we get buttoned up, sir?" "Right away, Father." I gave him a quick hug, let the Navy drop crew seal us in. The shakes didn't start up again. Shortly, I was able to report, "Bridge, Rico's Roughnecks, ready for drop." 31 seconds, Lieutenant," she added. "Good luck, boys. This time we take 'em." "Right, Captain." "Check. Now some music while you wait." She switched it on. "To the everlasting glory of the infantry." A historical note. Young Roger W., Private, 148th Infantry, 37th Infantry Division, the Ohio Buckeyes. Born Tiffin, Ohio, 28 April, 1918. Died 31 July, 1943, on the island New Georgia, Solomons, South Pacific, while single-handedly attacking and destroying an enemy machine gun pillbox. His platoon had been pinned down by intense fire from this pillbox. Private Young was wounded in the first burst. He crawled toward the pillbox, was wounded a second time, but continued to advance, firing his rifle as he did so. He closed on the pillbox, attacked and destroyed it with hand grenades, but in so doing he was wounded a third time and killed. His bold and gallant action in the face of overwhelming odds enabled his teammates to escape without loss. He was awarded posthumously the Medal of Honor. This concludes the reading of Starship Troopers by Robert A. Heinlein. This book was read by Lloyd James. If you would like to obtain a mail-order catalog or additional information about our growing line of audiobooks, write Blackstone Audiobooks, P.O. Box 969, Ashland, Oregon, zip code 97520, or call 1-800-SAY-BOOK. That's 1-800-729-2665. Thank you.